Arcane Analysis is brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
The portals are open. The refreshments are conjured. Settle down for Arcane Analysis.
Welcome to episode 18 of Arcane Analysis. Tonight I'm joined by my co-host, Allie, and we're going to be talking about playtesting and QA.
So testing for games is something that we don't think about a whole lot. I think we just have a game and get it, and we're like, yay, game new, played. But Warcraft has taken a much larger interest in game design, testing, and all that jazz because of the nature of its constantly evolving realm. And having to account for things that are constantly changing, well, you have to test a lot of things, not only the things that you have just newly implemented, but how the new things interact with the old things. So it's a constantly evolving system and, you know, requires a lot of work. I guess something is that it's easily ignored because when things work, you don't even think that something was tested. Like, was that bush as you ran through it rustling the correct direction? Or, you know, is that horse as it's running, is its hoof oriented in the right direction? Some things that, like, I've noticed for me playing that suddenly things don't work. And it's just interesting to see how
can you clip through that wall and get to content that was never released? Which is like, there's an entire genre of like pastimes devolved around that. Speedrunning, which is all about exploiting and capitalizing on bugs in games that were never fixed to skip massive segments and complete games in crazy amount of time. That's why there's, you know, Mario that is, I think the world record's under 5 minutes now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's, it's cool.
I guess you bring up the idea of Mario. Like, some of the things that, when you look at Mario as such a minute game in terms of the scale and the structure and the assets a game like that has, were, you know, of course, limited at the time based on, you know, the capabilities of systems and stuff like that. But, you know, if you look at the artwork of a game, there's only a couple different models for the characters throughout the whole game. And you don't have to have a lot of, well, did that animation fit the right time for here? Or, you know, does that animation fit every single time or only this time? Or testing as a game was significantly easier in the era where the assets and the complexity of a game are so much smaller.
Right. And it had to be finished before it could ship. Whereas now we've got living, breathing games that, you know, they patch and test and update literally till the day that it's out and then continue to fix it as it goes. And WoW is especially that way, since we've got, you know, weekly, sometimes daily, multi-daily hotfixes that roll out for things that just didn't... It's not that they maybe necessarily didn't come up during QA, and that's one of the things that, like, is a big issue, is that there's so much ground to cover for a surprisingly small team. You would think that there's probably hundreds of people testing. It's probably closer to a dozen or a couple dozen, you know. And it's triage. It's like, if you were healing, you've got to tackle the high priority, you know, game stopping sorts of things, and then the little stuff can kind of trickle through. Also, things that aren't perceived as an issue while things are in development are suddenly very interesting in the hands of players. They're very, very creative, especially when it comes to
finding ways to make things work in their favor.
Right. I mean,
this is the best way to do it.
It's like every patch that comes out, there's somebody that exploits a thing and they have to go in and hotfix it and roll characters back and ban people depending on the severity of the exploit. You know, one of the biggest use of clever game mechanics versus exploitation is like the Lich King, the Sarnite bombs. It's something that, you know, most normal people wouldn't have expected to do or see as they were going through the encounter testing, but the raid team saw it, decided to go with it, and was like, well, it's consistent, so it seems like it should be in the game. And Blizzard, you know, put their foot down and said, no. Like, why would you think it's acceptable to completely remove a segment of an encounter and find that to be acceptable versus stacking in one corner so that all of the thingies go in one direction? So it's interesting to see that kind of delicate balance for things that do slip through.
That may not be players like you and me, we've lived that experience, but it's sometimes hard to remember that it was, you know, years and years and years ago. So for people that I guess don't understand, the Lich King had a platform, and then the edge of the platform would fall off at certain points of the phase, and then come back up. Well, there was an item called a Serenite Bomb, and it wasn't anything that anybody used, the average player, and even most high-end players wouldn't even use the items, but one player in a top-end bleeding first guild had decided to use them in their rotation because playing a rogue, there's a lot of downtime, and so they could make a ton of these items that would do damage, not much, but enough to, you know, make him say, well, I can fill a GCD while I do this, because why the heck not?
It might be 1% over the course of the fight, and that may or may not be a world first kill.
Exactly. But what they found is when that player used those Serenite bombs, it triggered some sort of bug and left the platforms up. And so a mechanic would be Valkyrs would pick up characters and fly them over to the edge of the room. Now, in that phase, the platform would be down. So if you got over the edge, if you got to where they dropped you off, you would fall to your death. So you had to kill them. But if you didn't kill them, if you did this bug and then the platform stayed up, they found that the Valkyr could carry you all the way to the end, drop you, you'd still be on the platform, and then you could come back to the fight. So that was a lot of time damaging, and a second target that would move away from the Lich King, which was the main boss. You know, that's a lot of downtime that you don't have to turn and target something else, turn and restart your rotation. Like, it was just
turn
huge.
Turn and chase it, reapply dots, turn all kinds chase. Of crazy, yeah. crazy stuff.
And so it really changed the fight. And it was something that, you know, Bleeding Edge Guild will think about it and look and say, okay, well, if we can keep doing that and it happens consistently, then why not give it a shot? Because, you know, we're here trying to get the world first kill. And sometimes those people don't think about what they're doing as, you know, is this the right thing to do? Or is this really supposed to be what happened? Is this just a feature or something like that? And, you know, honestly, it's hard to say that, yes, they knew it was wrong. You would like to think that because it was completely encounter changing, but, you know, people do weird things to get their name as the world first.
Right. It's so. Like in more recent history with Archimonde from Hellfire Citadel, there was a thing that you could do to skip a mechanic there, but it didn't completely negate. It skipped a mechanic, but it didn't completely erase it from the entirety of the encounter. And the same thing happened with Gul'dan, that there was a mechanic that they were doing a thing and completely negating it, and it was deemed not okay to do. Or no, it wasn't that they were skipping a mechanic, it's that they were using an add-on to basically negate players having to think and use personal judgment, and therefore kind of completely trivializing a mechanic. And it's the same thing with, like, AVR, again, 8 years ago in ICC. They had things that just placed markers on the floor for everybody to see so you could run to your little spot. And I think
you
it was one of those things.
Draw on the floor right. was the biggest thing. Like, you could literally say, this person here. You could draw things. You could force point arrows between two people. And while some of those things have been incorporated into DBM that you see today, other things have been incorporated and broken subsequently because they do want, you know, there's only so much that they can let you do to make encounters difficult.
Right. One of the cool things from that, at least for ABR, like, I'm almost positive that we got world markers very, very shortly thereafter.
Oh, which, very shortly after.
Because it was a brilliant tool. It was really handy for trying to quickly organize things, but it was a matter of how do you turn something from being a tool to an exploit?
Mm-hmm. So. And that's just something that's, you know, the developers, as they see things come up, players are the best testers, because they think, especially in live servers with the number of people and the masses, being able to think of things in weird ways helps them to either fix or change or modify things, not only in the current content that you're playing of, but, you know, for future things, you know, like the world markers, like the arrows and stuff like that. But I think what you were talking about between Archimonde, it was Hell Yeah was the fight. Whereas if a tank died in Archimonde,
you
could negate an ability, which was great. But you still had to use an ability. You still had to make sure that you saved a battle res for that tank. You had to use certain, you know, you had to sacrifice something to skip that mechanic. And they deemed it okay, because every time you wanted to skip that mechanic, you had to have a tank die. And there was only so many times that you could let a tank die at that point in the fight before you would, you know, essentially end
run out of reses or
run out of reses or something. So, you know, that was deemed acceptable. Whereas when you got to Helya, people were doing the same thing, forcibly letting tanks die. But the problem was you would skip that mechanic, and then here's where the QA bug fix came in, and what they determined is not okay is that ability never cast itself again. So for one death, you could effectively end that ability from seeing it the rest of the fight. And it's, you know, as it says, from a player perspective, if you only got to see the first, the fact that she didn't cast the ability again, or maybe a tank died and you just realized that ability never cast and you never noticed that it was supposed to keep casting at point and point and point.
Put two and two together, it could be an honest oversight or a clever use of mechanics.
Right.
Or a blatant exploitation. It's always interesting how clever we find ourselves until we need to play dumb. Like, players as a whole. So it's interesting, but it's always one of those things of like, well, why didn't they catch it in QA? And the possibility is that, like, well, you know, if they spent 12 months testing this instead of 3, yeah, they maybe encountered it. But again, the group execution may just have never allowed for that to happen. So it's, you can't find a bug if you never see the bug. And one of the biggest issues with QA testing in general is that it needs to be repeatable. You have to be able to replicate this bug and not find that it's just a weird, you know, ghost in the system that decided to throw out its little imp horns and mess with you. And that's one of the fun things that I've always found when I'm beta testing or doing PTR testing, especially for like Warlords, because I went really, really hard in beta and PTR, alpha beta testing for them. Like, I loved finding stuff that was super, super broken, and I would screenshot it and find out what I did to break it. And, you know, when your game client completely crashes and they have that little window, I, you know, write them a absolute novel of like, this is what I did, this thing, this is how it happened. And before I submitted this report, I did this 6 times. Because in like the garrison with the tier set armor, I was trying out the raid tier set for Blackrock Foundry, I want to say, because Heimal didn't have any tier gear, right?
Right.
If you were invisible, it would crash with the tier gear on. Oh, like if you popped and viz, it would crash. It would do really crazy things. And there was another one where I had had a garrison follower that was supposed to be a orc, a horde orc shaman, but they were flagged as an alliance character, which was really fun. but they were only flagged as an alliance character if you put them in the jewel crafting hut. And they would attack you and rip your face off. It was really, really funny. But it was one of those things of like, well, why did it do it here? Well, I did it in this hut, but not in this hut, and only at level 2 and not at level 3. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that they do, but on a much grander scale. But again, it's probability. How many different variables do you have to recreate the thing? And some stuff just slips through. It's the same thing with like stress tests. Like another boo-boo to come out of Warlords was the launch. It was something that they only had a few hundred people, not several hundred thousands or, you know, millions, literally millions of people logging in and getting stuck at the same bottleneck. It was just something that their systems, A, they anticipated that many people getting to that same point at the same time, and B, just the sheer volume of players that actually picked up Warlords in general, especially because it was such a massive upswing in what the player numbers were at the time at the end of Mists. So it was just completely unexpected. And so they had to rush order new servers and install them within a couple of days. It was something that they were going to do anyway, but it wasn't seen as a priority until everything broke. And then it was nuts, you know, and launch issues happen all the time. Blizzard's gotten better about it over the years. Like, what's the Diablo one? Error 34? Things that you just don't see on testing, and it's when they flick the lights and everything goes on and things break in crazy, fascinating ways that you never expect.
Right. And it's interesting to, like, you bring over the, you know, the flip the switch kind of thing. A lot of testing that they'll do isn't actually on live servers, of course, because they're trying to test things and little things. So they have like dev builds and internal builds and playing around on certain things. And as they migrated over, you know, if somebody changed a bug and may not have documented it or something like that properly. And, you know, as much as I'd like to say it never happens, I'm sure it happens all the time. And as soon as you put it over onto PTR, let's say, suddenly things aren't working and you're trying to figure out why the heck it was working on the dev one, but not the PTR. And so you have to go through all those little things. And then, you know, if that happens on PTR, well, honestly, there's probably a chance that it happens goes to live, and you see these really wonky little things. And as you're migrating data over and back, it's just to make it work, make the game, you know, patch and update, you're probably going to have these little issues that pop up that you don't even think about. And, you know, you're going through hundreds and hundreds of bugs and, you know, probably thousands per person and just trying to brute force your thing.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get. That reminds me of another bug that was in one of the like PTRs or betas recently. The last couple expansions, there was one particular boomkin on one particular server that when they shapeshifted, it crashed all the servers. And it was literally just this one player. For some reason, if I remember the story correctly, they had like a certain item that was in a certain bag slot, and when they shapeshifted, it broke it. It was weird.
Wow.
And they,
that's
like,
impressive.
They went in and moved the item to a different bag slot, and it fixed it. Never had a problem with it again, but it was just a weird fluke accident for this one player. There was just, you know, one digit off in their code or something that caused a crazy thing. So it's always a grab bag of, I mean, testing in general, it's very systematic. I don't know how much so for like WoW, because it is a live game, but I know in like fixed products that ship out, you know, especially for like consoles and stuff like that, like their QA testers literally run up to walls and just jumping up and down for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours looking for where you can clip through so that they can fix it. And of course, in open world games, they send people out to go do different activities. I was reading a Kotaku article about, I think it was Grand Theft Auto and Evolve, and how, like, the things that they tested and sent out like strike teams for was kind of interesting to figure stuff out. And there was one case where, like, I can't remember if it was one of those two games or if it was another one, but like the dog that was following the main character, if it touched water, it died.
What?
Because the collision was off.
Oh, geez.
So, like, really weird, crazy stuff that you would never possibly imagine. And so it's easy to find things that you wouldn't expect. And some things, like, it doesn't really matter if they're kind of broken. Like, one of the favorite ones that's been busted since the game came out is, like, the crypts of Karazhan. Like, everybody knows you can clip through this wall in this one particular way and you get underneath all this unreleased crazy content that's underneath Karazhan. They never intended to release it. It's kind of messed up down there. It's really spooky, but there's no reason for them to fix it because it doesn't break the game, but it doesn't hide anything that's offensive or anything like that. So It's a little disturbing if you've ever been down there, but like it really is.
I remember
is.
Me and my friends used to like fly around underneath Orgrimmar because before they revamped it and missed the Pandaria, but it was like it was Mr. Pandaria. It was a really kind of cool thing to just go under there and hang out and look and see. It's like, you know, if you went through this particular place, now, of course, you know, we're just doing things. It's completely different when people are getting under the world and going mining and stuff like that. Like, that's completely different.
Right. And that's where it becomes exploitation. And that's why they try and, you know, capture those people.
That's why they try and fix them.
Right. You know, the same thing with, like, wild, you know, mining nodes that show up in the middle of trees when there's no flying in the game. Mm-hmm. So, and people do try to tamper with live code as well for their own benefit. So it's... It's interesting because it is live that there's all kinds of wild stuff that can come up. But I don't know. It's testing is always interesting because it's always ongoing. Obviously, once an item or, you know, a content feature ships, so to speak, in WoW's case, you know, a patch releases, they shift to the next content. So, you know, encounter testers are working on stuff for Argus, or maybe some of them are working on stuff for 8.0. They could split the teams. It kind of depends on, you know, what their development cycle is and how far along they are and how many problems they encounter to begin with. As far as I know, I think I have a couple of friends that are on WoW QA that they're in, like, super crunch right now. So, but it could be for a week, it could be for 3 months. You never know. It just depends on when they get things to a satisfactory level for us to take a stab at on PTR.
Yeah, I mean, internal testing is so intense because they have to make sure that the game works. Once the game works and runs as intended, they can put players at it. And, you know, as we discussed, players can find ways of breaking the game that developers never even thought. And here's kind of the way that I've put it, and it's so easily translatable to my job as a chemist, you know, in the daytime. The way that I do something and I design an experiment and set up and things to run a certain way, and you know, because I set it up, I know exactly how to run. So if something goes wrong, I know how to fix it. And I'm looking to fix what should happen because I know what's going on. You know, if I have to take a vacation or something and a coworker or somebody else comes in to run that experiment, they are like the players coming in on the PTR. They have no clue how that's supposed to experience. They may have an idea of what's supposed to go on, but if something breaks, they have to fix it in a way that, or if they find a new way to run something that makes it easier for them to run, maybe it might be easier for me to run too, but how do I know until somebody else looks at the idea? And it's easy to think that, oh, well, because I thought of it, somebody at Blizzard must have thought about it for, you know, something that goes into WoW. But oftentimes developers hand, I can almost guarantee you, developers hand QA people, you know, something of, hey, I developed this asset, can you test it? And they're looking for, you know, this is how this asset is supposed to perform on this here and here. And maybe they do tell you that, testers that, maybe they don't. But the idea is that they have a known idea of what's going on. And so they're trying to test how that feature works, whereas somebody else might come in, as you said, players, another tester, or, you know, something else who's going to use that same asset in a completely different way. And then developers are going to go, how the heck did that happen? And testers are going to be like, well, that's not supposed to happen. How did that happen? And it all goes back to, you know, how do we take different looks? And, you know, even if you have, let's say 30, or let's say you even did have, you know, 100 people on a QA team, it's never going to happen. But say you had 100 people, that is, you know, I know PTR, you're going to have a couple hundred thousand. So that's, you know, 1,000 times that number. And on live, I'm probably completely off, but say, you know, say there's only 4 or 5 million people playing the game. That is, you know, like 10,000, you know, say 50,000 times the number of QA people and minds trying to look at the same thing in a different way. And, you know, the wonderful thing about the world and people is we all think slightly differently. And so nobody's going to come to the same conclusion, especially if you're trying to test the same single thing. And so that's why they do have the PTR. That's why they do have to make hot fixes when things come live, because the number of people that access the same content increases and increases. So you're going to have more chances of somebody thinking, well, what if I do it this way instead of the intended way?
Absolutely. And while players do find bugs on PTR and submit the reports, it's a possibility that that bug has already been fixed in a build that's going to come out 2 days from now. Like, it's tricky when people view betas and PTRs, because yes, they do ask you to go in and try and break the game a little bit, but just in case, again, because players are creative in very interesting ways sometimes, but a lot of times the focus is stress testing, surely just from the number of people that are going in and trying to experience contact to make sure that, you know, systems and servers and everything is stable and can handle it, that, you know, somebody unsheathing their weapon isn't going to crash a server, but also it's a prime time for feedback. Again, this Kotaku article that I was reading from their Australian office actually was about how the development team, when they were releasing betas, was we create this content and this is how we want you to enjoy it, and players come back and go, yeah, that kind of sucks, like it could be so much better, how about if you did this? And so they gather all of that feedback in massive quantities, take it back, you know, retune things in terms of pacing and difficulty and all kinds of stuff. And like for this particular studio, it was a very, very, very important aspect of their creative and development process to get that input from players to make sure that, like, we have a great game for you, we have a great idea, but we want to make it a phenomenal game and experience for you. And that feedback is what, you know, drives it from third to home plate. And by having that kind of dialogue between players and developers to ultimately create a better experience. And so it's, you still want to be nice when you're giving your feedback, at least in terms of like, this isn't broken because they wanted to be broken or for you to have a bad time. They thought this would be fun and maybe it wasn't. And, you know, that's something that I've heard developer friends have struggles with, is like even internally, just from a developer aspect, like it's very, very important that they reiterate and they collaborate, and something that one person might find amazing and they put their heart into it and they send it out for a review with their peers internally, you know, that never even touches a QA's hand, and the feedback on it isn't that great and it's kind of soul crushing. So they have to go back and tweak it and make it a better experience. And then they ship it off to QA to make sure that it's not broken and that they find it fun. And then it gets to players and that they find it fun. And, interesting and compelling and a satisfactory challenge. And that's why sometimes we'll see boss encounters from PTR end up totally different on live than when they were raid tested. Or if I know that was a thing for Legion, at least, like, they did beta testing for raid encounters so early in the process that they had to send them back out again before the raid was released for an additional player pass, because so many changes had been made to make a more solid, cohesive experience for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And it's something to note that, you know, players want to test things and give feedback, not only from does it work, but is this fun, of course. And a lot of times, and I will say I've seen things where developers will say, no, 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 you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. This is great, this is fun, this is perfect. And then they come back later and they kind of retract. And, you know, we kind of harass developers, and that's not really the nicest thing to do, because it's really hard to develop something and create something that you're really excited about and have somebody trash talk it or say it's awful. Not to say that they should dismiss all the feedback and, you know, constantly just stand by their opinion, but it's really hard. And, you know, I would have to, you know, I'd like to say that it's just, you know, just developers that struggle with that, but I'm sure everybody has that issue where if they're told they're wrong, or, you know, something that you do isn't good enough or something, it will, like, grab at anybody that they want to defend it, or, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe have some sort of reaction. It's hard to separate that testing versus opinion versus, you know, is things working? And there's so many factors that go into it that we don't even see or permeate. Like you mentioned, they may have had 6 iterations before, you know, players even got caught wind of it. And if suddenly after 6 intense restructures of something, the first thing they hear is, oh, this is awful, you know, there's 2 options: either improve it, keep working on it the way that you think it is, and hopefully the players like it as you complete it, or, you know, restart over. And, you know, some of those things are just hard to comprehend. And I guess the easiest is definitely going to be to, I'm going to keep working on it the way that I want it, and hopefully players will think it's better. And I think that's the easiest for anybody.
And it's definitely something that we see, especially when players get upset about promised, quote, quote, flailing wildly, content that gets cut from the game. And it's like, chances are they either didn't find a system that made it work well, or they couldn't make it fun. Like Project Titan in its entirety, they couldn't figure out how to make it fun. And they poured years into it, and so much time and effort. And in, you know, classic Blizzard fashion, if it wasn't to their standards, it wasn't coming out. And so they canned it. They tried to, they spent a year trying to fix it, you know, after years and years and years of iterating and trying to, you know, start from scratch, and it still wasn't good enough. And then they canned it. And the tiny little shred that was fun, you know, was the seed for Overwatch. And that worked. And it's amazing and phenomenally popular and awesome. But like, how terrible it would have been to get the, I don't want to say half-assed, because that does a massive disservice to, you know, the developers that put, you know, their lives into it. Some of them stake their careers on it. But it still wasn't quite good enough. And so that's one of the biggest things that I have a lot of respect for Blizzard for. And they, you know, even on the QA end, have a reputation of, for some of the, like, articles and QA interviews, which were massively given by anonymous QA people, just because a lot of times QA situations aren't that great. Blizzard had a consistently positive review of how they treat their QA people, the communications that they have with their developers, and, you know, the level of quality that they put out, and trying to listen to let's make everything right and awesome the first time before it even gets into the player's hands. And so it's something that, like, obviously I'm very vested in Blizzard just because of, you know, my personal situation and relationship with people that work there. But it's a level of respect that I take for people anywhere in my own job and people that I interact with that my assumption is that people care a lot until they prove me otherwise. So I always try to be nice about things, even if they aren't awesome and I don't particularly like them. I try to still think that they have their best intentions at heart.
You touched on the points of, like, making sure things are done right the first time. We get the awesome or horrible, whatever, meme of, you know, Blizzard soon. When is that actually going to mean? And it's kind of the funny interaction of trying to get things right the first time versus making sure players have content on a reasonable time scale basis. You know, we like to mock them for that thing. And I've done it. I'm sure you've done it. I'm sure everybody that's, you know, played a Blizzard game and listening has done it to some point. It's so easy to do, but the flip side of it is that we also talk, at least me and many of my friends talk about the Blizzard polish. Something that comes out always looks and feels good, even if we don't necessarily like what is being offered. Like, to me, I have never enjoyed Hearthstone. It's not a game that I like. It's not a game that I really enjoy. It's not a genre I enjoyed. But Blizzard put it out, and I hate to be like that Blizzard fangirl, but I definitely tried Hearthstone and tried it for probably a month, month and a half, 2 months maybe, and I just couldn't get into it. I hated it. Not that it wasn't a good game, but I just couldn't love it. I couldn't like it. But the actual game itself was so smooth to play, even from the first time I saw it and could get my hands on it. It was so easy to maneuver around and work through the game. It was Blizzard polish. But, you know, if that game had come out half a year earlier or 3 months beforehand, who knows? Maybe it wouldn't have been nearly as polished. That would have been pushing people away from it. And now we see other companies. The Witcher card game is coming in. I guess there was another card game, and you just see more of these little. I guess Valve is doing one now, from what I hear.
Yeah, what is it, like Artifact or something like that?
It's based off something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
can't remember. And granted, I mean, card games have been around forever. Like, Magic's the granddaddy, certainly. But but Magic is still largely popular as a physical card game, which has completely different rules that it has to play by, because you can't hotfix a card that's in physical print. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
You know, but their systems for kind of making those fixes and trading things in and out is that they, you know, they have sets that can be used, so cards get phased out into the wild world and they aren't used in a competitive play. And as Hearthstone has grown and they add more content, they've had to do something similar, but at least they have the ability to keep things more balanced more rapidly in a way that's easily consumed by the players, and it keeps it entertaining. It does have that Blizzard polish, and because of that wild success, you see people coming up with more card games, and their mechanics are different. Some of them are interesting. I haven't come across any that quite keep my eye, I would say, as much as Hearthstone does, but I'm a very, very infrequent Hearthstone player. I love it. I'm bad at that game. I'm so bad. But I still throw money at it and play and, you know, fiddle with the new cards and find ones that I like, even if they're unconventional and I don't win much, because I don't have necessarily a bad time. I lose a lot, but I don't hate it. Like, I'm still enjoying myself because the animations are good. The dialogue is funny between some characters. The adventures are fantastic. I love those the most. I'm not really into the, you know, constructed decks, again, because I'm bad at it and I don't invest the time that I could be a lot better, because I like playing other games more. But that's my shortcoming as a player, not as the content that's consumed. But I love listening to other people talk about Hearthstone. I love watching it competitively. It's great. And that's why other people are trying to capture it. It's the same thing with WoW, even. Like, it wasn't the first most wildly popular MMO. EverQuest was. But Blizzard put their polish on it. They made it better. They made it last for years and years and years on a massive scale. Like, you can still play EverQuest, but their player base isn't anywhere as significant of a size as Blizzard's is. And that's why, you know, other games tried to do crazy things and make other MMOs and pray and cross their fingers that they could be the WoW killer. And they have an impact, they have their loyal fan base, and some of them have been phenomenal, but they didn't last the same way that Blizzard does, because they continue to polish, they continue to iterate, they continue to reinvent and breathe life into an aging game system with fascinating constructs. And they continue to test and find out what people like. And, you know, that's why we see systems changes for things like artifact power and the artifact knowledge. And it's still sometimes kind of frustratingly grindy, but they've acknowledged their shortcomings because the numbers didn't run the way that they thought they would, or players threw a lot more hours of effort at it than they thought they would, thinking that people would get a little tired and kind of give up, and they didn't.
They didn't.
Yeah, surprise! Players wanted to stop playing WoW? No. They're just going to keep going. Which is good, you know?
Yeah. I guess, like, some of those things is, like, it's nice to know that even if they don't like making a change, that, you know, feedback, testing, QA, all that jazz combines into shaping how the game we see. I mean, heck, after years of posting in about how the horses move in the game, particularly the spectral steed or whatever like that. I don't know. I kept calling it Starfarter. But the front hooves of that stupid horse would bend forward, and you'd see, like, the hoof facing forward as it's running. Like, horse hooves don't move that way. And I would send in a bug report probably every 2 months saying, hey, you should fix this, because this is not how they work in real life or anywhere close to it.
It
was something that my friend shared with me in college, and I never noticed it until she mentioned it. And I said, this is terribly infuriating to watch day in and day out as I'm writing not just that one, but all the other ones. And so I would make a mental note and, you know, post it. I think the ground animation has changed, but I'm pretty certain that the air animation is still not fixed. I haven't looked into it recently because I've been flying on horse mounts, but it's just one of those things.
I
want to
log in and go look. But similarly, like, blink bugs forever.
Oh gosh, everywhere.
I found a new one, like, recently when I never knew was there. Because of the Chromie scenario, so we're back out at Wormrest Temple, I discovered a new blink bug from there that you can fall through the whole temple if you blink in the right spot.
Nice.
One that I never knew until, you know, 10 years later. Or I guess eight-ish, nine-ish. But yeah.
Don't blink as the floor falls out during Fallen Avatar. You will die. Also things that you never knew. So I guess
I usually blink out early because I'm already far away.
No, with Avatar, when the room.
Oh no,
falls.
Avatar.
Yes. So what happened the other night in raid? As I'm pew pewing along, DPSing, having a good time. I think we got him. We were fussing around on normal clearing, but we got him to like 15% before the floor fell. And I thought to myself, oh, this will be wonderful. I will fall a little bit and then I'll blink and I will go to the floor underneath, and then I'll be able to DPS a little bit more and beat that other silly mage that I was fighting against. wrong. It resets your elevation as the floor above you. And so as you fall, you are now falling actual height. And so I fell and I just went splat. And everybody was like, what happened? You were full health. I saw you. What'd you do? And I said, I blinked. And they're like, oh, okay. And they just laughed at me.
That's great. I hadn't tried to blink that one. Like, once I learned that you get fall damage from it, I usually slow fall at the last minute and then just spam Scorch because I have the Scorch belt. And it does me good to spam Scorch as I'm falling because then I get more pyros. So, yeah, now I want to go see if I can if I can kill myself on Fallen Avatar. I'll do it in, like, LFR, maybe, so it won't be so bad. But I want to do it now. I want to break the thing. But yeah, I'm trying to think of where we can kind of go from here. I think we covered everything in terms of QA. But, you know, if you've got time as a player to check out the public content, or if you have the privilege to get into a beta, you know, give the time to it. Give the feedback, even if it's not looking for bugs, even if you just log in and check it out, it's still giving them valuable feedback. And, you know, if the system does crash, you know, fill out the white box, don't just close it. Like, they collect data from the clash to the crash that you might see, but it's still having some extra perspective as to, you know, why did this thing happen. It's, you never know, you might save that one bug from driving you crazy 6 months or 10 years down the road.
And something as simple as, you know, proofreading quest text, or, you know, making sure that zones, the art is consistent through. I mean, there's so much that goes with testing that it's easy to overlook some of the simple things that players can pick up, that, you know, maybe QA people didn't miss it. Maybe they noticed it, but maybe they didn't notice it might have been out of place. And so sometimes it's worth, you know, sending those extra reports. Unfortunately, I'm sure some of them are, like, if they're listening, are tearing their hair out going, no, you know, not more work for me. But, you know, it helps everybody along the ways, because if something isn't working right and you can, you know, send that report in that fixes it, then you save a lot of people trouble to find it or have it come and bother them throughout the rest of the time.
Absolutely. So yeah, if you guys got any interesting testing stories and, you know, beta flubs like we've shared, you can give us a tweet at Arcane Analysis. You can shoot us an email, arcana@blizzpro.com. You can join our lovely, awesome Discord. We have the link in our pinned tweet on Twitter. You can also poke me or Allie, and we'll get you an invite. It's still a little quiet now, but we're looking for more dialogue and always interesting show ideas that maybe we haven't thought of yet, and look forward to share with you. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Toodles.